across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Monday, August 21st, National Senior Citizens Day. It's also National Internet Self-Care Day, National Spumoni Day, National Brazilian Blowout Day, and Dr. Lyerly, it's National Report Upcoating Fraud Day. And the photo with that is, you know, a doctor in a lab coat holding a stethoscope while being handcuffed. So apparently there must be a thing about doctors who put in the wrong codes so that they can get overpaid. In other words, you know, medical fraud, which is fine. But shouldn't that be on the same day as Don't Pay Insurance Company CEOs, you know, eight-figure salaries day? I'm just thinking maybe they go hand in hand.
I'm feeling like in Wisconsin, it's more like a thing where doctors feel like they could get handcuffed.
Yes.
Period.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
We're taking care of their patients. But yep. Yeah, upcoding. That happens. They don't teach us how. Like in medical school and residency, they teach us how to take care of people.
Yes.
But they don't teach us how to actually do the billing part. So we've got to figure that part out on our own.
Yeah, go figure. Up North News reporter Selena Heller is here as well and is going to talk about some of the recent stories she's done for us. Also coming up at 7:30, it is Motherhood Monday. So Kate and Nicole from Motherhood for Good will be here, along with State Assembly Representative Christina Shelton of Green Bay. We'll have a back-to-school theme coming up when they all join us here. We'll have the weatherology forecast from meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki, and Terry Bell is here, Civic Media News Director, with three things to know to start the week. Again, you can get our newsletter at any point by signing up on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the top banner of the homepage. Today's newsletter has my column on what to watch for in the Republican presidential primary debate in Milwaukee day after tomorrow, and some back-to-school shopping deals that you should know about as well. So look for that. And that's if you click newsletter on the homepage. If you click shop, Kristen, you got to get some of these shirts.
The shirts came in.
Oh, I saw them online. Yes.
Yes. So we've got this one here says, "Am I up north right now?" You know, because everybody always wonder. Oh boy, my shirt attacked the microphone there. Yeah.
there's that, and oh, did you see this one?
This one has the definition of a bubbler. Again, just your classic Wisconsin shirt. Hold that up, and it defines a bubbler as a water fountain. Ways to use it in a sentence: grab a drink at the bubbler between beers. You drink from a bubbler and you throw coins in a fountain. And that ranch dressing was so spicy. Where's the bubbler? So, you know, just classic
really?
Wisconsin right
That's
there.
That's a Western Wisconsin thing. We can handle spice in the East, Pat.
Oh, listen to you.
I mean, Minnesota is where they give you ranch dressing on the table at the Mexican restaurant.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And that is culturally more like Western Wisconsin. So, like, give me some spice, baby.
No, I married into a Manitowoc County family. I know the cheese stands alone when you're talking about that. I know what Eastern Wisconsin is like. And they like their mild foods as well. Selena, how are you?
Good.
Good.
How are both of you?
We are great. It's so nice to have you here. Did either one of you watch the Women's World Cup final yesterday? Nope. Spain versus England?
But you did.
I did, because I'm an old man now and my body won't let me sleep in late on weekends. So on Saturday morning, I watched that Quincy Jones documentary. On Sunday morning, I watched the soccer game, which was a really good thing to do. And the other thing I did was I signed up for Blue Sky. I got this invitation. It's one of these Twitter alternatives. And so I'm now on Twitter, Threads, which is the Facebook product, Blue Sky, Post, Mastodon, and of course, you know, like 14 different Facebook pages that I monitor here. I can't actually even talk to you right now. I should have you do the rest of the show just so I can keep all these other pages updated, because we don't have one really good social media spot, you know, for all of us to gather in.
Are you getting a sense that one of them is gaining more traction than the others?
No, because when Threads first came on board, a little over a month ago or so, I thought, you know, everybody flocked to it for like a week or two. And then it saw a big decrease, in part because they don't have a desktop app. There, you can use it on your phone, but not your desktop. And then Blue Sky is really good on your desktop, but they have a very clunky phone app. And right now, even though Twitter works a lot worse than it used to and has so many more trolls on it, the app itself still mostly works. And so it's I think it's still the Wild West. I think any one of these things will become the, you know, AOL of its time, and we'll go, what was it? Remember CompuServe? That was a thing.
You know? CompuServe.
You know, that was something once upon a time, I think. I don't know. Selena, what we're going to take a break here in just a sec, but of all the stories you've been covering this past week, what's one that sticks out with you the most?
Oh, goodness. I talked with the wife of a man who designed one of the Brewers logos.
That's right. Logo. Yes, the ball in the baseball glove, the mm-hmm. M and the B logo.
Clever logo.
Yeah.
Love that logo.
I'm okay with it. You know, I always get a kick out of people who, like, they say, I didn't know it was a baseball glove. I'd look at it a few times like it was a magic eye thing. And I'm like, I knew it was a baseball glove from the very first moment. I'm like, look, it's a baseball glove. It's made out of an M and a B. But apparently it's really tricky. It's a really tricky illustration. But yes, you have a really great story on the website about that, about this was just, you know, some young guy who heard about a contest, entered it, and you know, won that prize. And then we'll tell you where the story goes from there. So we'll talk more with Selena about her stories. We'll also have the weather forecast from Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology, a Brewers update about yesterday's game with the Rangers, and more coming up just ahead here up north.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on.
In my Louis Armstrong there for the Sleepless in Seattle soundtrack, number one on this day on the album charts, this day in 1993. The Milwaukee Brewers swept the Chicago White Sox last weekend. Then they went to L.A. and they got swept by the Dodgers. Then they went to Texas and they swept all three games from the American League West leading Texas Rangers. The bats finally came back to life. They'd scored only 3 runs in 3 games in Los Angeles, but then they scored 21 runs over 3 games in Texas. They flew back home. They're off today. They play at American Family Field tomorrow evening and Wednesday afternoon against the Minnesota Twins, who lead the American League Central Division. Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology joins us now to tell us more about the heat is going to be on coming up for the middle of this week, which is, it's not fun, but, you know, it's not a tropical storm and earthquakes at the same time, like in California. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yep, you're exactly right. Yeah. And I mean, of course, if we're going to have it, might as well be the heat. Overall, a hot forecast is going to be the main story for us, really kind of all over the place this week, depending on where you're at. Today, mid to low 80s from Wisconsin Rapids down to Waukesha, and for the southwestern portions of the state, looks like mid to upper 70s for the rest of the listening areas. Mostly cloudy for most, but sunshine expected closer to Lake Michigan, Oshkosh, Waukesha, and Milwaukee. Warming up for the rest of the week, though, it doesn't look like any advisories around Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, and Oshkosh, that central portion of the country, but I wouldn't be surprised if some do pop up as we get through the week, so definitely something we'll keep an eye on. Chance for rain tomorrow for those locations. Then getting into the 90s Wednesday and Thursday before cooling down significantly so by Friday as a cold front comes in, back into the 70s or right around about 80. For everyone else, Madison starts to see a heat advisory Tuesday morning with sunny skies and highs getting into the 90s and heat indices over 100 degrees. For Amory Baldwin down to Richland Center, an excessive heat warning goes into effect Tuesday morning with the same conditions expected, sunny skies, highs in the 90s, and heat indices over 100. For Waukesha and Milwaukee, not seeing an advisory until about Wednesday morning with an excessive heat watch going into effect. Sunny skies and highs getting into the 90s by that day. Still sunny and hot conditions on Thursday for everyone. Highs in the 90s. Excessive heat watches or heat advisories for most. And as I mentioned earlier, for central Wisconsin, starting to cool down for everyone on Friday as a cold front begins to push through. So some relief in sight this week.
All right, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
And again, you get the forecast throughout the day during breaks throughout the Civic Media Radio Network on our shows, and occasionally a live report like from Jennifer there, as she does every day for us. Kristen Lyerly and Selena Heller sticking around before we do our Motherhood Monday segment coming up in the bottom of the hour here. And Selena, what was the name of the thing that you called the educational piece with the deer? And I asked you, what the heck are you talking about? Doe something?
Fondorosa.
Fondorosa. She's like, I covered by text message. Fondorosa.
Fondorosa.
And of course, I'm like, what the heck is Fondorosa? It's a deer educational thing, right?
Yes, there are deer. There are other animals. And let's see, Saturday in St. Croix Falls in St. Croix County, we went to Fondorosa and fed the deer. I have always wanted to go to this place, but I never could remember the name of it. And yeah, Fondorosa.
Wait, is this an event or is this an actual place?
It's a place. So you can go anytime, any day, and you can get, you know, a bucket of food to feed the animals, and some of them are in enclosures, but then and there were deer in an enclosure, and that's what we want to go for, is the deer, because you can see donkeys and llamas and alpacas, you know, other places. But I thought there was deer roaming around this place, and we were looking like, oh well, we don't see any deer. And then all of a sudden Emery was like, hey, and then there's just deer all of a sudden. And then she's like walking up this hill, and there were deer everywhere.
So I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but take it in the joke it was intended. Do you have CWD now, or does that set in after a while? At what point does your brain start to... I'm guessing there's a lot of... Aaron, shut up. I'm guessing there's a lot of testing going on there for safety measures.
Well, I would have to find that out. Yes.
Yes, I would hope so.
CWD in the past. So.
Yes. Again, look for that story. You are writing something up about this, right? It's just
hopefully,
not
the, yes.
Okay.
Have some good pictures and things.
Okay. Good. Good. You also covered some chainsaw carving that was going on, and I, you know, it's funny that in Chippewa Falls, if you've ever gone up the hill to the Northern Wisconsin State Fairgrounds, at the base of the hill is what used to be a gas station, but now it's a guy that just does chainsaw carvings, and that's his shop. So I get to see that all the time. But for a lot of other folks, this recent event in the Chippewa Valley might be the only time they see chainsaw carving now and then.
Yeah, it's really cool. Every year at the logging camp, and it's sponsored by the logging camp in the Chippewa Valley Museum here in Eau Claire, the U.S. Open Chainsaw Carving Championship is held, and it's been held there for quite a number of years, and it's a really cool event. Chainsaw carvers from around the world come, and like, they're the best chainsaw carvers in the country. A lot of people right in the country. One we had from Wisconsin, his name was Michael Koppel from Wittenberg. He lives in Milwaukee now, and he's an industrial designer there, and he was kind of, you know, I thought the fan favorite because he was from Wisconsin. He was like, oh, I don't know. I talked to him on Sunday before this yesterday, that's when it wrapped up. They carve from Thursday to Sunday. And so they just kind of have a lot of camaraderie, and they learn each other's skills while they're doing this, kind of learn some new things. And then at the end, they're judged and then they're auctioned off. So it was a really, really neat event. People went every day just to kind of check on the progress and watch them. And it's just interesting to see how they do these pieces. And they're incredible. They're just the talent involved in all of it. And he's pretty young. He was 29. So he was one of the youngest ones. And the guy who won it, he was one of the youngest people. He was from Canada, and his was called Moosin' Around. And it was a really cool moose.
Kristen, you look intrigued. Like, maybe this is something you want to consider taking up.
I'm just wondering, like, how do you pick up chainsaw carving as a hobby? Like, at what point does 16-year-old you say, I'm going to go grab a chainsaw and find a block of wood, and then
I know the answer to this. I know the answer. That at the age of 59, recall I was mentioning earlier this summer my problem with buckthorn, and we finally got rid of all this buckthorn that had infested around these two big evergreens. And so I basically had to, you know, put myself inside this big old evergreen with a chainsaw and start whacking away. Now, as I'm thwacking here and here and there, as I'm starting to, you know, cut the limbs closer and closer, and I'm realizing I'm getting like a bit of a curve and all that. And like, I see now where people are like, hey, wait a minute, I could do some stuff with this. And next thing you know, you're doing it in wood, you're doing it in ice, and it looks just like Andy McDowell. You know, if you're a fan of Groundhog Day, you know.
I've seen them do that outside of Lambeau in the Tinaltown District. Mm-hmm. Entertainment thing on Packer Game Day.
Yeah. Those are neat.
Yeah, so I totally saw it when I was doing all the work. I'm like, because it is, you realize you actually can get pretty precise with something that is so big and clunky. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not a surgeon's scalpel. I would highly recommend, Kristen, you stick with the scalpel with what you're doing there. But, you know, if you feel like you can be that precise with a little mini chainsaw, you go.
You let us know the next time that Sherry lets you loose in the backyard with a chainsaw, just so that we could, you know, like, capture some video.
Have a badger out there in your backyard.
Like, there should be some adult supervision on this, maybe?
We'll be the adults, Selena. I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give you scores.
All right, so we're going to be talking back to school coming up here in a bit. And so Emery is how old now? How old is she?
Six.
So how much school supply shopping either did you do or do you have to do yet?
We've done all of it. It's all ready to go. And you wouldn't believe the list for, you know, a kindergartner or first grader as it were this year. But
I would because those lists, I mean, they're growing like weeds. And I'm not saying that in a complaining way. I'm saying that rather than, you know, making teachers fork out like hundreds of dollars out of their own pocket, you know, if in the name of, you know, keeping taxes low, the school district isn't, you know, supplying teachers. And I think that's just ridiculous. Coming back to Kristen's example, she does not have to go buy her own scalpel. She does not have to go, you know, buy her own scrubs and things. And we don't do that for a lot of our other jobs. I didn't have to, you know, buy some a radio station. It's like, it's there. And yet for teachers, we say, well, you're on your own, kid. You know, good luck. And so, yeah, why wouldn't that list grow? Kristen, you got four boys. I'm sure you've seen all manner of lists.
I have a giant plastic tub full of random school supplies that I've accumulated over the last 20 years. It makes me crazy, though, when they get really specific, like get the Post-it notes that are 2¼ inches square pink.
Oh, goodness.
And, you know, you're at Target and you're like looking through everything and you're like, oh, my God, the Post-it notes. And the other parents are like, I can't find the right scissors. It's school supply shopping is always an adventure.
Oh, it's just now on the one hand, you've got something like Amazon that makes it relatively easy to create like a wish list or, you know, all these different lists. And you can just go in and see exactly what kind of product they're looking for. But, you know, that also comes with the side effect of, you know, people are buying there instead of at their local shops. And, you know, again, we're relying on, you know, the charity of others rather than, you know, how a well-equipped school should be run. But I do like that those wish lists can sometimes be, you know, the subject of some very nice acts of charity. We shouldn't have to rely on acts of charity, but it's still nice that any one of us could go and basically buy a teacher's wish list if we wanted to help out. I'm trying to have it both ways. I'm like, this is a great thing. We shouldn't have this thing, but it's great. And since it's here, you should go do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there's nice events. I think even tonight there's one that have volunteered at, and it's a nice, they give backpacks out full of all of the supplies that the grade would need. So you're at a certain table and the kids come and it has all the supplies the grade needs. And so it's nice that there are events like that help out.
Yeah, very much so.
It's the big picture, little picture thing. You know, big picture, we should be doing better. Little picture, everybody's going to pitch in to make sure that their kids and their teachers have what they need to be equipped.
I thought about that when I was passing by a farm that was selling sweet corn down at the end of the driveway, you know, kind of the honor system thing where, you know, there's a little wagon with sweet corn and then there's a little cash box there. And I wondered if it all evened out, if the people who, you know, decide they're not going to pay anything or can't pay anything, and then the other people who kind of overpay, and if it all evens out, what kind is that a good or a bad commentary on society? That there's always going to be some people that want to shortchange and say, hey, free corn, you know, and others who can't pay, but others do. Again, it takes all kinds to make it work, but at least it's sweet corn, not field corn. We had to offer up a correction recently for doing something about sweet corn, but the accompanying picture was field corn. And I just like, you know, I wouldn't have known that being a city kid myself, but once you marry into a farm family and you live in rural Wisconsin, I mean, you can tell it on a dime, you know, so.
This is your next Up North News t-shirt right here. Field corn.
Field corn, sweet corn. I like that. We might have that. All right. Uh-huh. All right, Kristen, have fun down there in the desert southwest in the tropical storm conditions.
Yeah, and you guys stay cool up there.
Yeah, and we'll stay cool up here. It's like we've switched places, you know, in terms of summer rain versus summer heat. Selena, thank you so much as well. You guys have a great day. And coming up next, it's Motherhood Monday, so we'll talk to Nicole, we'll talk to Kate, we'll talk to Representative Christina Shelton all next. You're up next. Okay, I'm not going to lie. Before we start our regular Motherhood Monday segment, talking to the ladies during the commercial break, they were pretty impressed with the new material at the shop at upnorthnewswi.com, the t-shirts and the tote bags and everything. So I'm hoping we're going to have new celebrity spokesmodels so that nobody has to see me modeling a t-shirt, you know, in the near future on social media. Nicole, Kate, how are you?
Good.
Right.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, nice to see you guys. And you brought a friend of the show, we can now say, Representative Christina Shelton, who is kind of like a five-time guest on Saturday Night Live, if you're a five-time host. I think Christina's in the area where she's going to get special recognition and maybe give her own spot over here. It'd work for us. How are you doing?
Star status this morning, Pat.
Yeah. Well, last time I saw you was a couple of weeks back in South Milwaukee, at the Wisconsin Public Education Network Summer Summit. I thought that was just amazingly uplifting to see, you know, that many educators and education advocates together. And I was there in a, you know, civic media capacity. So what brought you down there and what'd you think about it?
Well, it was a day of celebration for public schools and coming together and really being honest about the future of public schools, both in Wisconsin and around the country. And it's just always great to come together, you know, and see folks that are really in the trenches with you, people who are educators working at the administrative level, moms, dads. And we came together to talk about accountability of elected officials in upholding, you know, some public schools and to really look forward about the work to come. So yeah, it was a really, really great day and I'm glad I was able to be there.
So as we kind of get into a back to school theme here with Nicole and Kate, I wanted to start by saying this. We had put up something on our social media posts, again, one of these fill in the blanks. And the fill in the blank this time was something like, you know, the subject I think that should be taught in schools that maybe isn't is blank. And you got a lot of kind of the usual suspects, you know, like financial literacy and self-reliance. Some people had like first aid. Others had like healthy mind and body. But I also liked, and I know this is, Nicole, where you probably want to kick things off. I like the response of, you know, maybe instead of dictating a favorite topic, how about we do more just to support our schools and support our teachers? Because then all of the other lessons will flow from there.
Absolutely. I think that's key. And you know, back to school is right around the corner. I think we all feel it in our houses. The kids are scurrying. Everyone's picking out their school supplies. But the weight and the care that our teachers are going to have, you know, as we enter this school year, can't take that for granted. And realizing that, you know, our children are spending a great deal of time with them. We're so lucky to have those other adults helping be a part of our kids' lives and having the empathy and care and help to help them do their jobs is really important.
Well, and for all the talk, Kate, about mental health, this being a year of mental health and, you know, what Governor Evers had put in his budget proposal for taking care of mental health, the same goes for the educators and the staff and everybody else. This is just important that everybody be mindful of, we all have a job to do, whether it's teaching, learning, or supporting. And so that kind of mental care, self-care is important.
Absolutely. And teachers do so much these days. And of course, everybody wants, you know, their kids to be learning reading, writing, arithmetic, of course, but also that like social emotional component is so important these days too. And I think for teachers and for students, and there's a lot of kids who school is their safe space. So it's really important to have that be at the forefront of education these days. And so many teachers are already doing that anyways, and probably don't get enough credit for it. So it's really important that we recognize that and recognize the really important role that teachers play in students' lives.
Christina, you've had a front row seat on the state budget debate this year in the legislature, so you can speak as well to the notion of what Governor Evers was proposing, not just for mental health, but for schools overall, and where you had to look across the aisle occasionally at your Republican colleagues and say, well, you're against this too? How does that work? Oh, we just lost her just as she was going to comment about it. So while we wait for her to reconnect, I'll just say again, well, actually, there was an article in the New York Times this week about prisons. And the point I'm going to make on prisons is that the whole notion was about staffing and how short-staffed prisons are. Well, the same can be said for our schools and so many other things where under the guise of quote-unquote fiscal conservatism, we are short-staffing our institutions to the point of real harm. So Christina, you can either comment on, being penny-wise, pound-foolish on staffing, or I was asking you a question earlier about, what you saw about education support in the state budget debate.
So I'll start by saying, to answer your first question about the subject, as a former Phi-Ed teacher and health education teacher, that is always the thing that I champion, is making sure that our kids have access to physical activity, to games, to play, to culturally relevant, specific, health education materials. And, I think when we talk about mental health and we talk about supporting the whole child and we think about learning and academic achievement overall, we really, as parents, we know that if our kids aren't fed, if they're hungry, they can't learn. If they need to exercise, their brains aren't ready for learning. And so I think where we were with the pandemic was an opportunity to really reimagine what education and what learning looks like. The challenges, I think, are that, when we don't have enough staff and we don't have enough funding and we don't have enough supports for the classroom, it's sort of difficult to reimagine how it could be. And you kind of live in that scarcity mode right now. And parents want their kids to be healthy and well, and they want to have the access to the resources they need in school every day. And that's what I'm fighting for in the legislature, to make sure that we can implement those policies to support that kind of learning.
Can we just get to the meals and have you give an update on where things are in terms of what you have proposed, what Governor Evers proposed, and what hasn't yet happened in the legislature? And if you'll forgive the editorializing in the way that I throw the question to you, I'm just going to say, who is still against feeding hungry kids in schools, you soulless ghouls? Okay, that was my editorial. What's the update, Christina?
I love that. Thanks for that, Pat. Okay, so here's the update. We introduced the bill in 2021, the Healthy School Meals for All Act, which would expand school meals, free breakfast and free lunch for every kid in Wisconsin, regardless of income, anything. So everybody would have access to that. It's a way to invest in local economies, farmers and growers, to help working families, moms and dads, and also, oh, by the way, support kids. The bill didn't go anywhere. Governor Evers put that provision in his budget as for $120 million. Republicans on JFC took it out. And since then, we have watched 10, and I believe it's now 11 states take action on Healthy School Meals for All. Illinois just taking action last week. So just like cannabis, Wisconsin is in an island surrounded by states that have implemented Healthy School Meals for All policies. I'm really excited. The Healthy School Meals for All coalition is really strong. We are moving into this sort of 2.0 version, looking at some funding to run a really strong campaign in the next year. Just like I talk about marijuana, it's not a matter of if, but when, and we absolutely need to keep this momentum going. It's really exciting. And in a time of gerrymandered legislative inaction, it's the thing that keeps me going. I love it.
So Kate, can I put it just as crassly to you, because I want to get the input from, the Motherhood for Good folks. So people opposed to, free meals so that our hungry kids can eat. The question is, how is this still a thing?
I don't know how this is still a thing. I mean, I don't know. Everybody, I think there's like this problem that people keep viewing this and like the other side views this as a handout. And I don't know what, again, let's just reiterate that this is surplus money we're talking about. This isn't putting anybody out. This is money that is there for this reason. And it is not a handout. It's an investment. And I don't know what better thing there is to invest in than our kids and feeding our kids. And like Representative Shelton said, kids can't learn if they're hungry. And just like I said before, you know, school is a safe place for a lot of kids. School, a lot of times for some kids, is the only place they get like full healthy meals. And sure, not every kid needs it, but also why not just do that if we have the money and not have to single out kids and have all the administrative issues with trying to figure out who has it and who doesn't. And there are so many states who have adopted this. We're really, really hoping that this is something that can come to fruition in Wisconsin sometime in the near future.
I would hope so. Nicole, I'm going to come to you on this next one about voucher schools and then to you, Representative Shelton. For the folks who missed it in the last hour, you know, we podcast all of our shows. Go to the Civic Media website and you can hear more of the details. But the headline is that the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC announced over the weekend that they are getting set to fund a rather significant lawsuit challenging the voucher school program. And people would say, well, wait, hasn't this already been adjudicated? Well, yeah, but when it was upheld in court, it was still an experimental program, small, only for low-income students, and now it's statewide and cost taxpayers $400 million, and we're basically now funding, the taxpayers are funding two parallel school systems in Wisconsin. And Nicole, again, I know that there is a reason for debate between moms and between people in politics, but I just feel like people don't know enough yet. And maybe this lawsuit will help them understand just how expensive and what a drain this has been on our public schools.
You couldn't be more right. It is, if you actually look at the facts of what's happening, I'm hard pressed to see how anybody could have an issue with it unless you clearly are just wanting that to happen. But our public schools, you know, the funding that goes there is so important, and not just because of the, you know, school lunches and all the other things we're talking about, but there should be a basic core level way of our kids, you know, being educated in public schools, having these two different, entirely different school systems happening, you know, taxpayer funded. It kind of goes against the core of, you know, the greater good and making sure that all of our kids are getting this equal, great education opportunity. I'm going to say, I know, Representative Shelton has a lot to say on this issue as well. I've heard her speak on it previously, so I'd love to get her thoughts on it as well.
Go ahead. What do you think, Christina?
Well, thanks for that, Nicole. No, 100%. And, it's really important for people to know what's happening and what the end game here is on the privatization of our public schools. Pat, as you mentioned, this started off as a pilot program in the early 90s looking at in Milwaukee, and it has expanded to a place where we are sending over $400 million of public tax dollars to private institutions with little to no accountability and transparency. Schools that can actively discriminate against LGBTQ students, students with disabilities, they can essentially take the, you know, admit the students, take public dollars, and then kick students out for really almost any reason. And I think it's important here for us to remember that we have a constitutional obligation to fund our public schools. And what I get hung up on with this issue is, if these schools are taking public money, how are they not public schools? How are they not held to the same standards? And I think at a foundational level, that's what we need to talk to people about, is the issues on accountability, transparency, and discrimination.
All right. And let's wrap this up. We'll obviously continue to monitor the lawsuit once it's filed. Kate, let's wrap it up on a bit of an upbeat, positive note, especially on that topic of parental involvement. And we always hear about, oh, there's got to be more options or rights for parents. And the short response seems to be, you've got more options than you're already using right now. Maybe learn what's out there first.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think this whole kind of rhetoric from the right that, you know, that public schools somehow don't want parent involvement and they want to do everything on their own is just simply not true. Parent involvement has always been welcomed by public schools and public teachers. And I think, like, you're always welcome to speak to your teacher, to ask about what's going on. What we would recommend really is to get familiar with your school board, attend a school board meeting. There's so much noise on the right for this, like, Moms for Liberty and adjacent group type of things. And I know they have some stuff going on in Milwaukee this week. And while that's going to get a lot of the headlines, what we would really encourage is, again, that parental involvement. Spend that time looking up your school board, looking to see who's on it if you don't yet know. Look when those meetings are. Send your teacher an extra note as the school year starts and just tell them how much you appreciate them and everything that they do. There's so many different ways that you can kind of get involved and be a wonderful parent to both your student and the public schools and the teachers.
And Nicole, same to you, that there are ways, other ways that people could contact Motherhood for Good and say, hey, what ideas do you have for me to be a proactive, positive force in my school district?
Yeah, that's exactly it. At the end of the day, just get involved. Whatever comfort level you have with it, there's a part you can play. And I think awareness is just part of that. So yes, follow Motherhood for Good on Instagram or Facebook. And we're obviously sharing lots of info. But beyond that, just get to know your teacher, ask questions, get educated.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Well, I could not be more thankful for being able to kick off the school year coverage with the two of you, Kate and Nicole, and Representative Shelton. Hey, don't be a stranger. Let's you want to come back next week and we'll pick up the conversation from here.
Sounds good.
It's fun. Thanks, it's fun when you get fan favorites. All right. we'll be back with Terry Bell and Three Things You Should Know right after this across the Civic Media Radio Network. You're up north. Moser and a special guest, and we'll also have Up North News' Christina Laurie, who puts together our morning newsletter, and she previews some of the things that you can expect in the coming days. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell joins us with three things to know to start the week. I think so, because you're somewhere around the Civic Media headquarters, although I don't feel like I can see you, but are you there? There he is. He's having a seat right now. He's pulling up that microphone, and then he's going to tell us all about three things that we need to know to start the week. And once he's got the headphones on, he's going to be all
Pat,
over
good
this.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, this sounds so much better than what we tried a few seconds ago.
You know, that's the thing about Monday mornings is you never know where the settings have gone, who's touched the cords or the dials or whatnot. And you just, that is the one thing about having a home office is I know where things are going to be.
Tale as old as time in radio. You just never know on Monday morning who did what on the weekend to the way we left it on Friday.
It never has to be done with malice. It's just when you put that many cooks in the kitchen, sometimes you end up with what you think is going to be soup and is actually cottage cheese. Anyway, so Terry, obviously, when we talk about three things to know for the week, you can't help but get started with the Republican presidential candidates gathering in Milwaukee this week for their first debate of the 2024 primary season, with one notable absence.
Well, as far as we know, who really knows? But we should know by the end of the day exactly who is going to be on the stage and who is not. That is when the RNC has given all the candidates a firm deadline to, one, qualify to be on the debate stage, and two, commit to being there or not. And we have not really had any firm answer from Donald Trump. We did get news on Friday that he plans to be on the social media platform X that we used to know as Twitter.
It's
and
Twitter.
He'd be on with former Fox News host Tucker Carlson doing his own thing at the same time as the debate. And
oh,
I tend
Two
to think
who
that's
got fired.
What he will do. He gets to have it both ways. He can continue to be... He can get the attention he wants while at the same time, face a friendly forum rather than a hostile one.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't know how effective it is to be seen with, Tucker Carlson, on a little social media platform versus national TV. But, you do you, boo. We'll see how that works out. I mentioned briefly in the last segment a New York Times report from Mario Coran, who's an outstanding Wisconsin-based reporter, about the ongoing lockdowns at Waupun and other prisons, which may have been COVID-related early on, but this is really, as we said in our last segment about schools, this is a matter of staffing, isn't it?
It certainly is. So if the New York Times piece focused on Waupun, but this covers Green Bay, too, and probably a lot of other prisons in Wisconsin. But let's just take Waupun, for example. That prison is 53% of their positions are vacant.
53%.
Yeah.
In this maximum security prison, 53% of the positions are vacant. That's astounding.
Now, I imagine if, you know, anybody listening, if your own office was you know, 53% understaffed and how things would go at work. This is a maximum security prison.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with a very troublesome population of inmates, and the problems have already begun to manifest themselves. Conditions are pretty filthy, according to many accounts, and it's really taking a toll on mental health too. I mean, the lockdown is usually a step taken when there's a crisis. And the staff has to come in and intervene and let everybody cool off. Lockdown was never meant to be something that goes on for
months
on end.
No.
For
no.
sure.
And that's what we've got. So that's something that'll be more questions will be asked of the Department of Corrections and frankly, the legislature as well about, you know, whether these positions need to be funded better. And then
to that point, Pat, the legislature did increase pay for mm-hmm. correction officers, and they are sending money to some of the worst staffed prisons in Wisconsin. Difficult to say if it'll be enough, but at least there is an awareness, it seems, of the problem. It's perhaps a question of the will to do everything it takes to fix it.
Yep, there you go. And then the third thing to know is that Southern California getting rocked by the remnants of a tropical storm. I mean, it's not just there. I have a daughter that lives in the mountains of Idaho who is currently getting rain associated with a hurricane. It's getting weird out there, Terry.
Yeah, it's the weather. You could look all over North America this summer and take a look at the weird weather, whether it's wildfires in Canada or in Hawaii. Now we have this once-in-a-lifetime rain event happening in Southern California. The first storm of its kind in 84 years. Miraculously, somehow only one person we know of for sure has died so far. But it's wreaking a lot of havoc. Flooding is getting to be a huge problem today in a part of the world that is a desert. We're seeing flooding yes. in a desert right now is basically what it really boils down. Maybe as much as 10 inches of rain. Who knows?
And by the way, it really is as well a lesson in infrastructure and having infrastructure that is resilient to the climate. And what I mean by that is you look in Mexico, you know, an impoverished nation, and you see the water raging in torrents down the main streets. What you're seeing in California and Arizona and Nevada, by and large, I mean, obviously there's flash flooding. Dodger Stadium was an island, for goodness sakes, around all of this as we speak. But there were also, you know, the basins and the washes and the other areas that are set up. And again, even though it's flooding, it's not nearly as catastrophic. And it's something that Senator Tammy Baldwin and others have talked about, is the need to, when you upgrade or replace infrastructure, is make it resilient to the stronger storms that we're going to get. There's no doubt about that.
It's something to have to plan for. In the future, we're just seeing a lot of crazy weather mm-hmm. events that's, you know, used to be, I mean, they're still fluky right now, but yes. It's not that we've never had strange weather events in the past, but they are getting stronger and more frequent.
This is something. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell with three things to know to start the week. Thank you, Terry, so much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Pat.
It. All right, and that's going to do it for us tomorrow. As I mentioned, Hans Breitenmoser joins us, Christina Laurie, to talk about the Up North News daily newsletter that you can get over at upnorthnewswi.com. And also, you can follow us all day long on the socials. You can follow me on social media. That would be Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter and Threads and now Blue Sky as well. So, if you're listening live, coming up next, depending on your Civic Media radio station, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Green Bay, and Racine, Stu Daniels in the Chippewa Valley, Lacrosse, Hayward, and Oshkosh, Chad Holmes in Wausau, Stephanie Miller in Madison, James J. and the gang in Wisconsin Rapids, and they're all followed by Kristen Bry and As Goes Wisconsin. Have a great Monday. We'll see you tomorrow.